Hello everybody and welcome to episode 5 of Touchline for ZipSportsMedia.com. I'm your host Sean Watson, I'm alongside Mirror Sports, Aaron Flanagan. Aaron, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yourself?
Brilliant, mate. Yeah, thanks for coming back on the show.
No problem.
Just a disclaimer, just to start us off, I have got a bit of a tickly cough. It's been niggling away at me all week, so if I do sort of take a little break, or you notice a pause in the audio, that'll be why. So apologies straight off the bat, but we wanted to get right into it this week. We wanted to start straight off with you know, the big news of the week, which is not been much going on apart from the international break, but we'll start with England and Scotland from Friday, and England and Spain from Tuesday night, and just the England scene altogether. A 3-0 win against Scotland on Friday didn't have as much meaning to it as I thought it would. Normally it's great to beat Scotland, but there wasn't that much said about it, really. It was.
I think it's really because England were expected to win, and I don't think the result was ever in doubt. I know that people started saying, oh yeah, Scotland are up the game because it's England and things like that. No,
yeah.
You look at that Scotland squad, it's bang average. There were three players who started on our team who were playing in the Premier League.
Yeah.
You know, and you know how good the Premier League is now compared to the Scottish League.
Yeah.
There was no way that England were not going to win that match. It was going to be an absolute travesty if they didn't.
Yeah.
And To be fair, the match maybe wasn't quite as feisty as what people thought it would be. But I think that's down to the fact that England played quite well. I think England worked hard, and England controlled the game and managed the game. And yeah, all right, it wasn't like the traditional England versus Scotland matches of yesteryear.
Yeah.
But no, as an England fan, I think England fans will be quite happy. And
it was a professional performance, weren't it? They did what they had to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think on top of that as well, what I got from England that you didn't see under Roy Hodgson at the Euros was that off the ball, they worked their absolute backsides off.
Yeah.
You know, they looked like they were really putting in some effort. And I don't know whether that's because they've got a reaction out of the manager or whether they realised because of that fixture it really meant something to him. But I sensed a little bit of a change there that actually quite impressed me and made me think, you know what, maybe if Southgate can get the players working like that, play a bit more of the English way, because I was already felt more like English football than international football.
Yeah, because the argument has always been, why don't the English players take the intensity of the Premier League into the international game? That's always been the argument.
Yeah.
And that sort of looked to be the case on Friday against Scotland.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason why England. I think in times gone by, maybe England have been a bit defensive. In other words, they've tried to go, oh, the international side, they're quite good, let's monitor our game and the way that we're playing, you know, around them. Rather than just thinking, let's go for it. And in the Scotland performance, and I mean, I didn't see the whole of the Spain game, but the bits that I saw of the Spain game, it looked like England were going for it.
Yep.
It looked like the, you know, they've maybe brought some over. And you have to say credit to Gareth Southgate, and hopefully, you know, it'll continue.
That was going to be my next question. Is there a doubt in your mind that he will be the next permanent England manager?
He has to be. There's no reason why he shouldn't be. I know there was a disappointing 0-0 draw in Slovenia in his first.
But there always has been disappointment with England. There's always going to be. So
yeah, no.
It comes with the job, I think that
they've got to be his second spelling. Maybe he feels a little bit more comfortable in there. And England looked like they had a little bit more identity about them, and you know, something that can be built on. At the end of the day, they've had Gareth Southgate there, being bred, if you like, for the job, for a number of years now, with the England youth set up. So right now, why don't we give it a go?
Yeah.
If it doesn't work out with Southgate this time, then you know, I really do think England need to start looking abroad, because if we can't breed our own managers into doing a job, then you know, we need help from somewhere.
It's true, yeah. I can't see a better candidate at this point in time. And I think that I think it was a source at the FA said they expect to appoint Southgate within the next week or two. I'd be shocked if it wasn't Gareth Southgate. And I think, well, he's been unbeaten in his four games, won two, drawn two. Should have beat Spain on Tuesday night. 89th minute concession and 96th minute concession. Do we look too much into that?
No. Spain are a world-class outfit, and all right, you're a little bit disappointed that you can't quite see the game out, but as I say, from what I saw, England played quite well. They seemed to keep the ball. They looked reasonably exciting going forward. I think Adam Lallana is turning into one of England's best players.
Without a doubt.
Which is, you know, pleasantly surprising, because a couple of years ago he was, you know, really, really inconsistent.
Yeah.
Even last season he was in and out of Liverpool's team, and you thought, he's got the ability, but he hasn't got the consistency. He looks to have found that consistency now, and especially on the international level. And from what I saw, he looked brilliant.
Completely agree. excuse me. Moving on from Tuesday night, the 2-2 draw with Spain, came the headlines. It might have been yesterday morning. Did the paper come out a little bit before the Spain game with the pictures of Rooney on there, looking a bit worse for wear?
They will have been released Monday night, so it will have been about 10:30. Okay. So it will have been just after the game,
on the eve of the Spain game. Yeah. You will know by now that there's a few pictures of Wayne Rooney looking a little bit worse for wear. Maybe I think it was the Friday night after the Scotland game, or was it the Saturday night?
Yes, it was the Saturday night.
The Saturday night. So it wasn't straight after the Scotland game, but I think it was a friend's wedding. He's gone and had a couple of drinks, gotten a bit tipsy. And since then, the press have just absolutely jumped on his back and basically hung him out to dry. Yeah. First of all, I'll let Aaron run with this. What do you make of the whole thing?
It's a real, real complicated one, because while, okay, yes, it has been blown out of proportion, you can't say that Rooney is, should get off scot-free. At the end of the day, he's on international duty, he's been given time off. Man United will rightly be absolutely furious that, you know, England have been told to look after our player.
Look after in terms of don't let stuff like this get out.
Yeah, well, maybe so, but at the end of the day, you're risking not being healthy, you know, going off track, you know, if you're not abiding by club diets, you know, if you go off and drink loads. So I think United will be especially unhappy. But then again, at the end of the day, humans drink. They do. I like a pint. I'm sure you like a pint.
Yeah, certainly do.
And at the end of the day, it doesn't take... If you went out on the Saturday night... Say me and you went out on the Saturday night. We go back to work on a Monday morning. Or whatever hours, you know, we work. But, you know, the average person, they'll go out on a Saturday night, they'll go back to work Monday morning, they'll feel fresh and fine on Monday morning. That football match against Spain wasn't until Tuesday night. And I understand, yes, he's going to have to be training and doing little bits in there. But it wasn't like he did it the night before a game.
Is there a possibility that the decision to not play him due to his little knee injury was made before he went out to his friend's wedding on a Saturday night?
Yeah, I think it was almost absolutely made. I think Rooney's maybe taken advantage of a little bit of time off. He might have told a little porcupine to Jose Mourinho that he can't come back quite just yet. That could very well have happened. But, you know, at the end of the day, if a footballer wants a drink, then, you know, they're going to have a drink. They're human.
Yeah.
All right, they're athletes. You know, the diet will be a bit stricter. I think maybe what Rooney could have done differently was maybe say, I'm stopping at 1 a.m. rather than 4:30 a.m.
Right.
Because, let's be honest, if you look at the pictures of Rooney and you look at the state that he's in, he's clearly had a lot to drink. He's beyond the threshold of drunk. He's in paralytic, trolleyed, you know, whatever word you want to use to describe it. You know, he's well and truly drunk. He maybe should have had a little bit more professional and not got quite into that state.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we all do it from time to time. He's a normal human being. As for him being a role model, well, at the end of the day, he's gone to a private do, and in a private do in that situation, he's not there as a role model. He's there as a human being enjoying his life.
And to be fair, he hasn't actually done anything wrong. If you know what I'm saying, he's not gone and punched somebody, or he's had a couple of beers. You know, it's not the end of the world. Yeah. My opinion is this. Footballers nowadays, in my opinion, are too mundane and dull in what they do and what they say. If you watch an interview with a footballer after a game, you can guarantee they'll roll out 5 or 10 cliches in the interview. They all say the same things, and it is very, very boring to listen to and watch. I like to see somebody stepping outside of the lines. Okay, maybe he shouldn't have got absolutely paralytic, like Aaron said, but he's a human being and he's going out enjoying himself. Let's... I don't agree with the press absolutely jumping, and this has always been the case with Rooney. One minute is the top dog in the whole country, and the next minute is public enemy number one. There is no in-between.
Well, the reason people write about Rooney is because people like to read about Rooney. Rooney is a really popular character. If people didn't talk about Rooney so much, the press wouldn't jump on Rooney so much.
It's true. But there is no middle ground in what they say. He's either the greatest England talent in the last 20 years, or he's the worst.
Yeah, no, there's a bit of that. I think it's a tough one. I mean, it sounds like Rooney's not the only one who is to blame. Obviously, reports on the day that we are recording today suggest that is it up to 10, I think?
I think that's what I read,
Up to 10 footballers. So, you know, it's not true. Rooney's the captain anyway. He's going to take the brunt of it. I think he did a professional job in with his apology. And I think, you know, really we just need to move on. There's not much harm done. He just would have obviously wished that the pictures didn't get leaked.
Yeah, this is the age we live in with the social media and the like. Yeah. But another point to mention is our heroes of years gone by were all similar to Rooney in terms of going out and having a drink. You look at George Best, you look at Paul Gascoigne, you look at, all right, some people value Diego Maradona as a hero, and they're all cut from the same cloth. Yeah. I think Jurgen Klopp actually said that today.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was true or not, but that's what I read.
Yeah, no, I think Klopp said something about how he didn't do anything wrong. He said he's sure that Rooney will have just had a good time and gone home. You go back to what you said about how maybe footballers are a little dull, mundane, etc. I think it's because there's that much money being pumped into the game now compared to what there was 20 years ago, that footballers can't offend anyone, because they know that if they offend someone or they do something slightly out of line, slightly stupid, sponsorship deal gets pulled, clubs' liabilities in line, and if companies are going to pump the multi-million pound deals into the game or whatever they do, you know, the clubs have to make sure that the players are behaving. Rooney himself will be earning millions and millions of pounds every year just on sponsorship deals. That's where, you know, maybe this dull stuff comes. It's like, if you want to have the money in the game, you know, you've got to have a level of professionalism.
Yeah, I think, dull and mundane coming under the professional banner there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't mean it as if, like, the very, very dull people to socialise with. I just mean they all give the same cliched answers in interviews, which, like you say, it's probably to keep up the sponsorship deals and the professional image and things like that. But I'd like to see somebody step out from the norm once every now and then.
Yeah, no, Mario Balotelli is maybe obviously probably the most recent massive maverick that we've had in the Premier League, and there are a couple of others as well.
Yeah.
But, there's one or two that are in there. There'll be a few. I quite like these little videos. Like, I think during the Euros and stuff, England actually did a good job with their like FATV things, their interviews with players, getting to know them. Like the ones where they sat Eric Dier and Dele Alli down together. You've got to learn about them as people. And I think that's what fans want to know about players. And I think, in a weird way, fans might be quite happy that they've seen this of Wayne Rooney. It's like, yeah, he's a bit of a lad. He comes across as quite a nice guy. He's quite quiet, but he likes a drink. You're learning more about their personality as a person. And I think fans kind of quite enjoy that, which is why, as I say, over the summer, I think
you sound like
England. Really. I know.
Yeah,
that's why I think what the FA did with some of them are good, and you know, we can only encourage more content like that, you know.
Yeah, do you think social media's helped to break down the barriers between fans and players, or do you think it's sort of gone the other way where a lot of them have their accounts run by different people? Yeah.
I'm not sure how many accounts are actually run by, you know, agents. Obviously, a few of them are.
I think Rooney got himself into a bit of trouble with his, so I think he's passed his off.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the early days of social media, where people were still learning what to do, and there wasn't exactly social media policies at clubs and stuff like that. I think they were quite good.
Well, we've seen stuff with the Andre Gray stuff come back to haunt players these days, and
yeah, so obviously social media helps, because as I say, you do get to know. No players a bit, you know, a little bit better. there's a few footballers I follow that, to be honest, on the pitch are reasonably irrelevant to the massive scale of the game, but I follow them on Twitter because I find them entertaining. Robert Hoof being one of them.
I think Peter Crouch is another as well.
Peter Crouch, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's good. You want to be able to have that personal connection with the players. And,
but there's obviously a line to be drawn.
Yeah, it's not quite the old days, but you know, it helps.
Yeah. Moving on from that, the Premier League will be back this weekend coming. I'm sure a lot of you will be glad to hear those words. Because I see a lot on social media about people moaning and moaning and moaning about the international break. And I've got to admit, I am one of those people. I don't particularly enjoy watching the England national team, and I'm sure a lot of you listening to this will agree with me on that. Why do you think that is, Aaron?
I just think international football is dull. The pace it's played
at. So it's not just England?
No, it's not just England. I think it's just the fact that, obviously, when it's the international break, the English public only want to watch England, really, anyway. So they only got out of the way. So which means they only have one game over a weekend to watch and one game over a midweek. When it's the Premier League, yeah, you've got an option of potentially Friday night, then Saturday morning, then Saturday evening, Sunday, two games, one on the Monday. You know, there's loads of football and people are like, yeah, whatever free moments that they have, they can get football. Whereas people then feel like they're at a loose end. You know, say, early afternoon on a Sunday, when I'm off work, I enjoy, you know, getting out of bed, doing my thing, sitting down on the sofa, putting my feet up, watching the 1:30 kickoff. When it's international break, you can't do that. You're sitting down watching. This week it was Peterborough against Bolton, and well, I mean, with the greatest respect to them two teams, I don't really care about them.
Right.
But it's not a fixture I want to watch. Believe it or not, I would actually prefer to watch West Brom versus Sunderland.
Right.
Maybe not that fixture, actually.
Could have picked a better one there, couldn't you? But,
yeah. Well, no, the point was that I'd rather watch a bang average Premier League game because...
Than a lower league game?
Yeah.
Is that because of standard or entertainment or quality football?
I think it's possibly the quality of football. I'm a massive champion of non-league football. I follow non-league football, having my whole life. But it's mainly because of the match day experience.
Right.
Every time I watch the Conference National Football, it's on BT Sport these days... I don't think it comes across too well on TV. The lower the standard, you have to kind of embrace live for me.
Right.
I think for football to work at the top level, or for football to work on TV, it has to be at the top level with the best footballers. That's just a personal opinion.
Makes sense.
So, as I say, going back to why people don't like the international play, I think it's because there is a lack of quality football on TV. And at the end of the day, that's what we all enjoy doing. We all enjoy just sitting down and watching a game.
Do you think if England were a bit more successful on the pitch? Well, that's interesting. That's another point for later on down the line in the podcast. I've just got a little notification on my phone. I'll segue into that in a minute.
Okay. I have no idea what this is. This will be good.
What I was going to say was, if England were maybe a bit more successful on the pitch, would it change people's opinions of the international break? If they had a run in a tournament, you think something similar to Euro 96?
No, simply because, well, England haven't lost a qualifier in yonks. They've been on an incredible run.
Yeah, it is something like three qualifying campaigns or something.
Yeah, they've been on this mega run. And I think like the only qualifier at Wembley, at the new Wembley, they've ever lost was that one against Croatia. One fateful umbrella wearing holding night for Steve McLaren. But at the end of the day, people want to watch winning football, and England are winning. But when it's drawn out over so much time, you lose your optimism for it as well.
Well, there is no passion for something that's going to happen in 2 years' time. We're playing now for something that's not going to happen for another 18 months.
Yeah, exactly. And I think because England fans have been let down so much, maybe a run would help, because England fans are let down so much, like going, oh yeah, we can beat Lithuania, we can beat Slovenia, well, we couldn't even do that actually, but we can beat Scotland, and sorry, Scots, but you know, we do all that, and then it's like, but we go to the international tournament, and we're going to go out of the last 16 stage, and that is what we're doing it all for.
Yeah, well, we beat the same teams in the qualifiers that we then lose to in the tournament, which is
yeah, no,
England, I think.
I just think the qualifying campaign being so drawn out is a little dull.
Yeah, something like 14 games or something to qualify.
Yeah,
it's and you've still not achieved anything really, because everybody expects England to get there.
Yeah, nothing really changes until the last two qualifying games where the group might get slightly exciting.
Yeah.
It's just hard to get on board with something which you it's like when you read a book and then it's so easy to put it down and forget about it. Forget about it. And when you pick it back up, it's hard to pick it back up with the same enthusiasm, you know, from the same spot. And it's kind of like that with international football.
Yeah. Right, okay, I'm going to sort of jump gears a little bit and just address the notification that was on my phone a second ago. You might have heard that earlier in the day, this was a bit of a weird one that came out of left field, but the odds-on favourite for the MK Dons manager's job was Frank Lampard.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard that.
No, I turned my TV off in work after the cricket.
Right, well...
Just to try to focus myself.
So Frank Lampard was supposedly the bookie's favourite. I think something like 11-2 is the favourite for the MK Dons job. Okay. I've just got a flash on my phone saying that currently holding talks now for the manager's job is Steven Gerrard.
At MK Dons?
At MK Dons.
Oh.
What do you make of that?
Oh, well, I mean, I think he'll make a decent manager. I think he's got the qualities.
Do you see it being a player manager role?
Yeah, I think he'll be thinking, I can do another season. Long term, probably not. But it's a tough one. It's a gamble. At the end of the day, you don't know each of these players personally. They all have different qualities. Yep. And
we all thought Roy Keane would make a great manager.
Yeah, he was.
And he didn't.
He was abysmal. I always thought Roberto Di Matteo was going to develop into a quality manager. And he's, obviously, other than his Champions League win with Chelsea when he was caretaker, he's seemingly failed everywhere he's been. Who's the other one? Paolo Di Canio.
Right.
Gus Poyet. You know, for example, they've not done it. Good players don't necessarily make good managers.
That's normally the trend. I can't think of a great player that's gone on to make a great manager as well. Oh, an out-and-out great player. This is a difficult one. If you can think of one listening to this, please do let us know, because the one you'd think of maybe is Guardiola. But would you class him in the upper tier of great player?
No, because he wasn't playing in he was playing in a Barcelona team when Real Madrid were the dominating force.
Right.
Right. In Spain, it's a real good question. I'd say Laurent Blanc was one of the best defenders in the world at his time.
I'd agree.
And he's turned out to be an all right manager, but again, not a world class manager.
I can't think of one. Honestly, can't think of one.
Zinedine Zidane's is a peculiar one, because obviously he's already won the Champions League with Real Madrid.
Yeah.
However, what I would say about that is, it's almost as if he's peaked, because he's proven he can do it. You know what Real Madrid are like? They're going to get on his back and they're going to say, right, you've proven you can do it, you've got to do it again.
Yeah.
And it might only be a matter of time before even Real Madrid turn the back on one of their greatest ever players.
And with Zidane, not to take anything away from him, I always think with managers going to big clubs, half the job is done for them with the players they've got at their disposal.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, obviously, no, not everybody can win the Champions League, and it's a great achievement, but if somebody like, I don't know, let's name an average, Ronald Koeman was given the Real Madrid job, with the players he's got at his disposal, Modric, Ronaldo, Benzema, Bale, could go on.
Well, he did well because he's a good manager, I mean, but, you know,
somebody else then, I don't know.
Can I just add a complete contrast to that argument?
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to bring up United fans, but this season, we went into the start of the season going, look at who United have got. They've got this Pogba, Mkhitaryan, Ibrahimovic, you know, they've got Rashford who's coming through in his prime, Martial won this great talent, David De Gea, the best goalkeeper in the world, and you bring in Jose Mourinho and you think, all right, half the job's done for him.
Right.
He's one of the best managers in the world, and I'm confident that he probably still is, and things all go wrong.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's no given that great players are going to,
absolutely not.
But
it does help.
Oh yeah, it helps.
it helps when you've got Ronaldo and Bale and whoever else to let loose on the Champions League scene. But I can take your point.
It's also interesting that with Real Madrid that they haven't quite fulfilled the potential of maybe the squad that they've had over the past few years. Like that, obviously, we know how good Barcelona's squad are, but Barcelona haven't spent anywhere near the money that Real Madrid have.
Nope.
So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. They seem to be doing all right this year. Interesting game this weekend. They play Atletico.
Yeah.
This weekend. I hope Zidane works out, because Zidane, for me, was one of my favourite players growing up. I grew up proper idolising the Galacticos.
What a player.
And the rest of the squad. I had a couple of Real Madrid shirts. I had all white kit with Roberto Carlos. he was my favourite, but that whole squad. So on that basis, Zidane obviously being the focal point in the centre midfield of that squad.
Yeah.
I really want him to do well.
Do you know the one thing that annoys me about Zidane? He looks the part on the touchline. He always wears a great suit. Doesn't wear a belt with his suit, and that annoys me.
Not?
He doesn't.
Oh,
that has got
dear.
To be the thing that completes the whole suit, is the belt.
Oh, no.
No, he wears a great black suit and a black tie, no belt. And I noticed it the first day he was on the touchline.
No,
you've
noticed it ever since. Yeah, I've never noticed it.
Next time you see it, and everybody else listening to this, you'll go, where's your belt?
I'll have to send him an email.
Yeah.
That I have his email. I will send someone at Real Madrid an email.
Yeah, any questions for Zinedine Zidane, send them to Aaron, who can send them to zinedinezidane@hotmail.com. Bottom line, Steven Gerrard, would he make a good manager, yes or no?
Instinct says he's going to struggle.
Okay. We'll leave it at that.
We won't, because I'm going to add this point in. I just think at the moment MK Dons are struggling, and I think he needs to go somewhere where there's maybe a bit of a more solid grounding. That's why I think Ryan Giggs made the right decision by not going to Swansea.
Okay.
Not going to a club where it's set up for potential failure. MK Dons would be an incredibly tough job at the moment, and I don't think it's the right first club for Gerrard. He could be a good manager if he's led into the game the right way. At MK Dons, I'm not so sure.
Okay, that's a fair enough point. We'll move on from that. We mentioned the amount of money that Real Madrid spent in comparison to Barcelona, and that brings us to the next part of the podcast. I think today, or was it yesterday, that the Price of Football report came out?
Last night,
Wednesday night, the Price of Football report came out. It's something we look out for every year. And it's not really changed from last year, but because this podcast didn't exist last year, we thought it'd be fitting to bring it up. So basically, a lot of different statistics have come out about how much it costs the average fan to attend different games up and down the country and across Europe and across the world. Aaron, you've had a chance to look at it, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I've had.
What are the key points that you've picked out?
I've had a look through. I mean, this year actually is a lot more positive than maybe previous years, is that a lot of ticket prices have come down at the top level, in Premier League level, and season ticket prices, you know, are seeming a little bit more reasonable. We know that football is very expensive, but it seems like from this year's study that Premier League clubs, which obviously we'll look at primarily, are using, you know, the extra finances they've had from TV deals to, you know, actually realise, right, we can try and help fans out here. And credit to the 20s Plenty campaign for, obviously, the away tickets are all capped at £30 now.
Was it Man City that started that?
I don't think it was. I think it was an outside group.
Right.
But
I seem to remember the first time I saw that was at a City game, protesting outside the ground. So
yeah, I think they were an outside group. I don't know if they were. They might have been City fans who started. But either way, they did great work, and they managed to convince them that they needed a cap on prices, and they've got them down to 30. They'll still try and get them down to 20, but I think 30 is a great start. And as a result, you've seen a few of the home costs for tickets actually come down a little bit as well, which is decent. I mean, obviously clubs will get the money back elsewhere. They'll fleece fans one way or another.
Mainly at the pie stand.
Yeah, we probably don't realise it's happening yet. Probably because of our hunger.
yeah, we're all thin now. Yeah.
But there's positives to take this year, which is really. There was a really interesting comment from a chap that I think he was the chairman of the Football Supporters Federation. On one of the videos, he basically said, if you let, if every Premier League club let all the supporters that go into their ground for free, they'd still make as much money as they did before the existing TV deal. That's how much more money that the new TV deal has put into the club.
Right.
And thankfully, clubs or the businesses are going to keep on growing. They're going to keep on wanting to make more and more money because they are businesses these days. But you know, at least they're responding. At least they're showing positive signs and more positive signs today. West Ham have come out and said they are in the early stages of planning for safe standing.
Something you agree with?
Yeah, definitely. Like, people stand up anyway. You might as well make it safe.
That's true, yeah.
It's one of the things, you can try and ban people all you want. Every Premier League ground you go in, at certain points of certain games, people stand up.
Yeah, and obviously the main reason Seaton was brought in was because of Hillsborough, which was a complete freak. You know, a freak incident that is not commonplace in any football ground.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously it's slightly different the way that terracing and stuff is built, you know, when seats are in them as well. But either way, you want it to be as safe as possible. If you know that they've tried for 20 years to try and get people to sit down, it hasn't worked.
No.
So your best solution now is to make the standing safe.
Yeah.
And
I think I saw some fan get a warning or two. I think it might have been West Ham. I think it could have been West Ham in the new ground. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think somebody received a written warning saying you've been caught standing up twice, three strikes and you're out.
Yeah, there was, I'm going back 2 or 3 years now, Sunderland sent a load of letters around to their fans. They actually banned them for a game.
Yeah,
because of persistent standing.
It's
which
a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, it's bonkers. So, you know,
and especially when you charge people X, Y, and Z amount of pounds to attend, and they can't stand up.
Yeah, it's you're not given the freedom to enjoy the match.
No. And standing, you know, I don't care what anybody says. Standing up adds to the atmosphere because people are more likely to shout and sing and everything else.
Yeah, providing that. As you say, the area around you is safe. You've just got to do it, and which is why I think the Premier League should press on. I know one of the main issues is the funding. Who's going to fund the changes to all these stadiums? Because you know it's not a cheap job. I know Premier League clubs have got a load of money, but they've still got to find the finance from somewhere that they weren't budgeting for and they weren't accounting for. But you know, in years to come, I think it's something we are going to see. I mean, look at how much of a success it is in Germany, how great their fans are, and
And combine that with, combine the safe standing with the relatively cheap ticket prices they have over in Germany.
Yeah.
I mean, we've looked at this report and sort of gone through it a little bit. And while the Bayern Munich season ticket, there was a stat that came out that said the Bayern Munich season ticket is cheaper than all but two of every club in the country up to the National League.
Yeah.
Which we think it could be a little bit misleading because it could be a technicality, but the point is the European tickets are generally cheaper but they make the money back elsewhere. That's sort of the gist that we've got from it.
At the end of the day they have running costs. They have to, you know, make money to be the level they are, to buy the players. They have the worldwide presence and, you know, has to be considered, and you know, they make the money back, but it just proves that, you know, you don't just have to fleece, you know, fans for ticket prices.
Yeah.
Well,
me speaking personally, I'd love to go and watch Man United every single week. If I could afford it, I would, but I am priced out. I cannot afford £50-60 a ticket every single week. And I know there are cheaper tickets, but generally on an average, I can't afford that. So, all right, some people can, but the average punter, surely, is going to struggle to pay that week in, week out.
Yeah. I'm exactly the same with Man City. I went to one away game with Manchester City last year. It was Liverpool away, and it was before the £30 limit came in. I paid £50 for my ticket, and then I was at a place right near the back of the away end, where, you know, you have to like be, obviously everyone stood up in front of you as they are in away end, and I was in a place where if you're stood up, you could not see all of the pitch, so I was having to like bend down and crouch and a little bit to, you know, try and see the pitch. I'm like, I paid £50 for this experience. Which obviously is not ideal, and you know, I wouldn't do it every week. Thankfully, I go and watch non-league football. Yeah. But if I can get to a City game in between,
yeah, and the price is right.
But I mean, that's what makes it affordable for me—the fact that I know I can't do it every week, and the opportunities that I can do, I can justify going because I'm not doing it every week.
Of course, the best example I could probably give is when I worked at the MN with yourself. Actually, finished a Tuesday night. United were playing Norwich in the Carling Cup then. Rang my mate up, said, do you fancy going down? I think there'll be tickets, it's only a League Cup game. He said, yeah, no, we're down. Headed down to the game. Sorry, so the cheapest ticket we've got is £75 each.
Christ.
So we'd come all the way down. We thought, right, we'll pay it. And we paid in it, and it was probably the dullest game I've ever watched in my life. The point is £75 for a League Cup game, one, justifiable? Two, how is it sort of morally correct? How can you charge £75 to watch a game of football?
Well, it's morally correct because people pay it. Yeah. That's the only way.
Well, I paid it.
Yeah, precisely. You are part of the problem. The only way they're going to reduce their price is if people stop buying them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, because it's now a global industry and people travel over from all over the world to watch these games, they'll pay whatever they want because it's an experience they want to have. And unfortunately, the prices will stay at a reasonably high cost, I'm sure. But at least they're coming down slightly. It'll be interesting to see the knock-on effect of the pyramid. Say if the Premier League did knock down all the prices and say, no, we're putting these down to this level. Then the Championship has to come down. Then League One has to come down. And it all has to be relative. And then as soon as you do that, the likes of your League One, League Two, Conference, Conference North, Conference South clubs that are relying on the revenue that comes through the gates, because a lot of them are, they're going to suddenly have a massive reduction in money. Clubs lower down the pyramid are going to kill off. So it's a real interesting debate.
Model.
Yeah, yeah, because you're potentially going to ruin the pyramid by reducing ticket prices. I know that sounds ridiculous, but the knock-on effect long-term could be absolutely tragic. So they need to be very, very careful as to how they manoeuvre everything around.
Yeah, the distribution in wealth is completely... It's far too wide, is your point, because you have clubs like United having the ability to fork out £90 million on a player. And then you have, like you say, clubs at the lower level potentially going out of business.
I say, if clubs want to readjust the ticket prices and things like that, they're receiving so much money. Maybe there has to be a system in place for them to take a portion of it and say, we're helping this level of the game improve, or further down the standards. Because at the moment, there's clubs who are living off scraps.
Yeah.
Absolute scraps. And whereas you've got United, who are currently happily sat on a £320 million debt or whatever it was announced as. It's a tough one. As you said, the distribution of money is wrong. I understand that you shouldn't just give these clubs money for the sake of it. But there has to be some way of helping everyone out and improving the strength of the whole of our pyramid. Yeah. And I think long term it'll help them then improve facilities, coaching, developing young players, etc. And I think build across the whole pyramid, not just the top, and you'll end up with an overall better product.
Okay, so that segues perfectly into our final topic for the podcast, which was the FA Cup. And we're going to focus particularly on Curzon Ashton because we've got Aaron here with us. We'll just start off, we'll address the cup run in a minute, but first of all, Curzon have just reached the second round of the FA Cup this week. What has this cup run done for Curzon as a club? First of all, in terms of finance, and then in terms of everything else.
Yeah, finance. We've earned money that we've never even dreamt of having before as a club. We knew that if we won the replay against Westfields, who were the lowest ranked team left in the competition on Monday, there would be a prize of £72,000, and from BT Sport, as they would be televising the second round game, which we have since learned is going to be against AFC Wimbledon.
Do you want to give it a cheap plug?
Tickets will be available in the next couple of days. So if you are in the Manchester area, you are interested in coming, £12 adults, £6 concessions, or students, £3 for under 16s. Check the Curzon Ashton website in the next few days. Tickets will be available.
Terms and conditions apply.
No terms, just turn up and get your ticket.
Get up, pay on the gate. Yeah.
No pay on the gate.
Oh, no pay on the gate.
No pay on the gate for this one, because we are expecting a sellout.
Okay.
Anyway, that over. But yeah, I'd say overall, the cost that we're receiving, it literally feels like people are throwing money at us. And that's the impact that the FA Cup can have. Because you're getting prize money, you're getting TV money. Because you're on TV, you're getting new sponsors in. You're getting this, you're getting that. Oh, you're branding that logo there, so we have to give you more money. Oh, you've been shown next on extended highlights, we have to give you that money. Honestly, we're just sat here going, God, this is amazing. It's like being showered in £20 notes, or £50 notes even now. Yeah. It's just, I mean, it's the power of what the FA Cup really can do. And I've said it before on this podcast, but the magic of the FA Cup really is still there in the lower levels, because no other competition in the world can do for clubs what it has done. Curzon, we're a club we make no profit whatsoever. Whatever scraps we earn go back into the club. We had to fund at the start of the season $120,000 for a new 3G pitch, which is our main source of income. So we were in a real troubled time, and you know, we've gone on a cup run, and suddenly, bam, it's paid for. The club's safe.
So it was a much needed cup run then.
Yeah, I mean, like we have fundraising events planned and stuff like that that obviously were intended for the 3G pitch, which will now go into the club and further bolster our funds. You know, we can grow so much as a club on the back of it. I can't express, you know, just what it means to have an FA Cup run. And because they're so rare, they just feel so special as well.
Yeah.
I say they're rare. There's a team called Stourbridge from the Birmingham area who are in the second round. They play in the third tier of non-league football and have done for quite a few years now.
Which is the Evostick Prem, is it?
The Evostick Premier.
Yeah.
And they are in the second round of the FA Cup for the fourth time in 5 years.
Blimey.
At that level. They are an incredible football club for what they've achieved.
Why haven't they moved out of the league then? Do they just put all their eggs in the FA Cup basket and go for it? Or
I don't think it's that they go for the FA Cup. I think it's just as, listen, everybody goes for the FA Cup when they're in it. Everybody loves a cup run.
Yeah.
Nobody thinks, oh, I'm going to toss off the FA Cup this year.
Right.
You just go as far as you can do. And I think sometimes, I think it has hindered them a little bit. They've gone a little bit behind on games, dropped down the league table. And when you go out of the FA Cup, traditionally, it's a bit of a blow. It's a bit of a downer, and it's then hard to pick people up again.
Is that something you've seen with Curzon this year? Have they sort of dropped off in the league while the cup run's been going on? Or
no, we went down to Gloucester away, which was going to be a really, really tough away game against the team right in the playoff picture. Obviously, we're struggling right near the bottom of the table. We went away there 2 days before this replay, so last Saturday, and we thought, which happened now, this will be a 3-0 loss. Everyone's mind will be on Monday. So we went down, like, we absolutely battered them. We won 2-0. It was just, like, for us, we've not yet had the, if anything, because
the hangover.
Yeah, but if anything, because we played a couple of low-ranked teams earlier rounds, actually, we got us a couple of wins that gave us a bit of confidence to move on.
I was going
to
say, has it invigorated you for the league season?
Yeah,
well?
And I think everybody's just got a belief and a happiness, because we got hammered on the first day of the season. We were 5-0 down after 40 minutes.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, I do, all too well.
Yeah, I think one of the tweets, I don't, is it you or Joe that runs the account?
Depends who's at the game.
Right, it was a fantastic tweet. It said, who was it you played?
Kidderminster.
Kidderminster 5, Curzon 0. Would tell you about the goal, but we're in the bar.
Yeah, that was me. And I was genuinely in the bar.
It was fantastic.
It went 4-0, I just thought, I'm beating the queue, I need a beer. And as I was in the queue, I'll be honest, I forgot I was on the Twitter account.
Yeah.
I went in the bar, grabbed a beer, and yeah, the fifth goal went in. The tweet was about a few minutes late. Some popped in, and you know it's 5-0, or not? Bugger. But no, I can't speak about the FA Cup. And the spectacle of the FA Cup as well. As we've said off air, the FA Cup replays are just the most phenomenal thing. Most incredible atmosphere. Some of my best ever, most favourite nights watching football have come in replays from the FA Cup, FA Vars, FA Trophy. I just think the whole idea of them is great. You know, it's like you got a second chance, but then you got your one-off shoot-off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Extra time, penalties.
Yeah, under the floodlights.
Yeah. It's always a night game.
Yeah, and because it's a replay, often you go back to another club where suddenly there's a load of sudden new enthusiasm for all these people. Oh, we're bringing this team back for the cup replay, and it annoys me that the idea of replays going has been touted by the FA.
Yeah.
Hopefully the big money FA Cup foreign TV deal, which has been agreed and announced in the past month, means that will not be happening, because at the end of the day they've paid, I believe it's $1 billion.
Blimey.
Across two companies around the world to show FA Cup. So hopefully that means they'll want more games.
Yeah.
So FA Cup replay survive. Because they really are the greatest spectacles.
How many games have Curzon played in the FA Cup this year so far? Seven qualifying rounds?
Well, there are seven qualifying rounds, but Curzon came in at the second qualifying round. So, in fact, we only had to get through three qualifying rounds to get to the first round. But given the calibre of teams we come in against, it's still incredibly hard to get there.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen very often. When you get to the first round, you've got to treasure it. You get to the second round, just drink and enjoy it.
Yeah, don't bother about the football. Yeah.
If you get to the third round, then I don't know what I'd do. But I'm not even thinking about that. We play AFC Wimbledon, and on paper we lose the game 5-0. So,
but football's played on grass, not on paper.
It is, but you know, let's just take it for what it is and realise that we're supposed to lose, and let's just take the day as a celebration for all the money that we've earned as a club. And
all the fans.
Yeah, that's what the day should be. It should be a celebration.
Of course, I agree. You had a point to make to me. A point you wanted to address, or a question you wanted to ask me.
Oh, yes. No, I forgot about that. Obviously, I mean, this question can go out to any listeners as well. If anyone's listening, tweet myself at Aaron Flan on Twitter, or Sean at Sean Watson 18.
Yeah, well, remember
Sean spelled SEAN.
Yeah, the correct way.
Are you sure about that? But just tweet me and let me know, Sean. I'll get your opinion on it as well. Curzon, it's the biggest game in our history when we play AFC Wimbledon. Okay. We've never really played in a game like it before. TV, you know, it's a game where people are going to want memorabilia, merchandise and stuff. As a Curzon fan, if someone showed up with a half and half scarf, is it acceptable to buy it? Oh, in that scenario,
you know what, I detest half and half scarves. I think a lot of people do.
I absolutely hate them. I think they're horrible.
Do you know what,
but in this situation I was thinking,
do you know what?
Maybe because of the novelty of the fact that, oh my god, Curzon on a half and half scarf.
Yeah. And the fact that they're playing Wimbledon and with their hit. That's another point. Okay. Right, okay. Answer this first. The fact they're playing Wimbledon, the fact that they've reached the second round of the Cup, I actually would justify the purchase of a normally detestable half and half scarf. That's my opinion, but it is such a monumental day for the club. I think, you know what, I think I might actually, I would have bought one myself.
Yeah.
If I was a Curzon fan, so. God.
I mean, I wouldn't wear it. It'd be one that I'd
tuck right in the bottom of the rucksack.
I'd put it in my car, and then when I'm, you know, if I'd look to putting it up in, you know, maybe my bedroom wall or somewhere in the future, find a place of pride for it.
Yeah.
You know, with a few other pictures of the game. But yeah.
If you won the game, you'd get rid of that and buy the half and half scarf at the third round.
Yeah, for when we beat Liverpool at Anfield.
Yeah, and then one at Wembley. And
yeah.
So we made the point there. I didn't even mean to make the point, but we made the point about Wimbledon's history. Yes. Are Wimbledon the MK Dons, or are Wimbledon AFC Wimbledon?
Wimbledon are AFC Wimbledon. And I put on Curzon's Twitter this week, because I travelled down to Wimbledon and watched their replay against Bury. I was putting some nice, you know, little updates on for the Curzon fans, and I put full time Wimbledon 5, Bury 0. Can I just say quickly, Bury are the worst team I have seen this season. They are an absolute disgrace to football. If there's any Bury fans listening, I'm sure you'll absolutely agree, you are absolutely atrocious. Moving on.
A burial of Bury, then.
Moving on, Wimbledon, so I'll put full-time 5-0. Curzon will play the 1988 FA Cup winners in the second round, because at the end of the day, it's the same fans. They got given their club history back. They've got all the trophies. All right, okay, it was a rebirth of a club, but it's the same fans, the same hierarchy, the same history. It's the same club.
Okay.
I'm not ever crediting that franchise that might be soon managed by a top Premier League manager.
Steven Gerrard, manager of Wimbledon, yeah.
With an FA Cup win.
Okay.
Although they might obviously adopt one with Steven Gerrard.
Yeah.
But, it's Wimbledon. AFC Wimbledon are the Wimbledon.
Okay, so what we'll do with this podcast then, we'll probably post this in the Curzon Ashton group, and I'm sure it'll get a few followers from a few Wimbledon fans. So if you are a Wimbledon fan, or an MK Dons fan, listening to this, and you've got a different opinion on whether Wimbledon are now the MK Dons, I'm or not AFC
sure,
Wimbledon.
I'm not sure whether I want any MK Dons tweet me or things either. I've said. I mean, I've come across MK Dons once. I watched them.
Well, they beat United 4-0, so.
Well, I mean, I quite liked that. No, I watched them I watched them in a playoff semi-final away at Huddersfield a few years back. I've got to say, the MK Dons fans, after the game, absolutely lovely people. And the couple that I spoke to all said, they both said, we understand we're hated, it's just our local football team. There were people from Milton Keynes said, we've not really had it as we've gone to watch our local team. And people have started to adopt it. I mean, it might not be the case for all of them. But, you know, they were lovely enough, but I'm sure they understand that effectively they are a new club. Yeah. They've adopted. They cannot adopt the history of Wimbledon. It's not the same football club.
Yeah. Can the same be said about the rebirth of AFC Wimbledon?
Yeah, well, as I say, because it's the same sort of personnel involved in the club. It's the same fans.
They might end up ground sharing with Crystal Palace in a few seasons back at Selhurst Park.
Yeah, well,
never know.
They could well do. But for me, it's the same club, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think I agree. But as I say, if you are listening, you've got a different opinion, let us know. I think, to be honest, I think that should just be about it. I had to bodge the ending on the last episode. I don't know if anybody noticed.
I noticed, but I knew what I was listening for.
Right. It was. It wasn't bad with the tools I had. It cut off the last bit of our conversation and I had to re-record on my own and just cut our out completely.
Yeah.
This week I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say thanks very much to Aaron for taking his time to offer his great insights. And you know, you've spoken actually very, very knowledgeable on this programme. I'm not saying that for a change. It does sound like I'm saying, oh. No, but honestly, I think you've spoken very knowledgeable, particularly on the football structure and things like that. So.
Oh, good, thank you.
Follow Aaron on Twitter, as we've mentioned, at Aaron Flan. Follow myself, at SeanWatson18. Follow at Zip Sports Media as well, to keep in touch with this podcast and anything else we might offer. Aaron, thank you very much for coming along again and taking time out of your schedule. And
My pleasure, as always.
Yeah, all the best to Curzon on the Saturday, the 4th of December.
It's a Sunday.
Sunday the 4th of December, and it's not pay on the gate. Tickets only.
Midday kickoff live on BT Sport 1 if you can't be there.
Yeah, if you can't be there, get it on the box. We wish Curzon all the best with that. Get your half and half scarf when you go down to the ground. You're going to have to get them into production now. Aaron, thank you very much. And please take care and listen to episode 6 when it comes out in a couple of weeks' time. Thank you very much.